Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, my name is Stuart Miles, and welcome to the Pocalypse Podcast. This week, we've got details on the new Motorola Edge flagship smartphone. Talk to Intel and Accenture about how the two companies, alongside the Cinnabar Environmental Foundation, are using AI to monitor coral reefs. And Associate Editor Dan Grabham joins me to talk about how I've been getting on with the new iPhone SE smartphone, now that I've got one in the office. But first, let's talk Motorola with Mike. So Mike, Moto is back. Tell us more.
Well, it never really went away, just in different guises. So not too long ago, we had the Moto Razr, which was the kind of reimagination of the flip phone, about 15 years after the original. But the one thing that Motorola's lacked for a good number of years now, probably, well, it's kind of arguable, maybe since 2013 when it brought out the X, is a proper flagship phone. And now they've come back with a brand new thing called the Edge, and the Edge Plus, which is the more significant one. And it's very much, hey, look at me, I'm the big flagship phone with all the fancy features, and it's kind of trying to make a mark for the brand again, really.
And so what's the main standout feature? Because there's lots of phones currently out there that are all trying to say that they're flagship, and it has become a little bit of sameness at the moment. So what's Motorola doing to say, hey, we are actually different?
It's a good question. Whether there's anything dramatically different within this is kind of questionable. It's got lots of big features, though. So the primary one is the camera. It's got 108 megapixels. Another big one is it's got a curved screen, so like the edges almost fold around the sides, really, and you don't really get any side bezel, hence the name, the Edge. Both of which, say, a year ago would have been like, oh my God, that's amazing. And it still does look really impressive. But we've seen those things before. So is this Motorola arriving a little bit late? It's possible. And it's certainly not a cheap device either.
And so why now? Because Motorola, if you look at them over the last 5 years, have been famous around the world, certainly in sort of outside of the UK and US, for their G range, and you know, they've done incredibly well in places like Brazil and stuff like that. So what suddenly changed to make them think, first with the Razr and now with the Edge, that they can take on the flagship mantle?
I think they've just been biding their time, making sure they get things done correctly. You know, it's been a slow journey to return to actually making money for this company, following getting taken over by Lenovo. It's kind of put them back in a better stead than where they were, because many years ago they were the phone brand, almost like the only phone brand you would go to. So it's taken a long time. I think they've started establishing themselves again through the much lower end stuff, actually. You know, the G series is still really fantastic for the money that it is. I think they've been growing the brand, wanting to build themselves back up to a point where people go, okay, Motorola, yeah, that's something that I would spend, you know, bigger bucks on, because ultimately this is entering that space where it's really trying to compete with Pixel, with iPhone, with all the big players, by delivering everything that it can.
And do you think they're trying to capitalize on the void that's been perhaps left by Huawei and the struggles that they've been having?
I don't know if it's intentional. I think that's just a product of how things are at the moment. I think more so there's other companies like Oppo that are kind of trying to fill that gap more rapidly. This, I just think, is it's been kind of slow to get here, and I haven't actually seen the phone in person yet, so I'm kind of curious to see what it'll feel like and how different it will be. But it, you know, it's an interesting prospect. It's got a bunch of, like I say, high-end features on it. And there are some little bits that really do stand out when you think about 5G. Say it supports millimeter wave and sub 6G, which barely anything else does. So in terms of connectivity speeds, you should there's probably nothing else out there that would go faster than this if you're in the right part of the world on the right networks and so on. So, you know, they're establishing themselves, saying, hey, we're the first to do this, that, and other.
Now, we've seen from some phone companies that they're keen to launch and then we don't see them for a long time. when do we expect to see this in people's mitts?
I think it's going to be a staged output, piece by piece. I don't think in the UK we'll see it immediately. I would expect it'll arrive first in the States in May. And then I would think it will probably channel into like the Nordics and places like that, in a kind of phased rollout. So it may be a little while before Europe sees it, you know, in full. We'll have to wait and see. There's no official confirmation on that as yet.
Still to come, I talk to Dan about how I've been getting on with the new Apple iPhone SE. It means that you can use Apple Arcade. It means you should be able to do a lot of AR stuff when Apple keep on pushing this, whether you want to or not. You know, there are things going on there. It pretty much coped with anything that I could do on it. Sustainability comes in many different guises, whether it's reducing your own carbon footprint by switching from petrol to electric cars, or planting a tree. There are plenty of ways to get involved. Intel, together with Accenture and the Sulabai Environmental Foundation, are focusing on the impact climate change has on coral reefs around the world. The partnership focuses on using artificial intelligence to monitor, characterize, and analyze coral reef resilience. But how do you do that? What are the processes involved, and how can a company that makes processors make a difference underwater? I spoke to Patrick Dorsey from Intel and Jason Mitchell at Accenture to talk about the collaboration, technology, and how AI is being used in the project. Jason, can you tell us a little bit more about the project?
Sure. We're really excited about the project that we've been working together with Intel and members of our ecosystem to help regrow and restore the coral there in the Philippines. The project started kind of with helping sink some structures into the reef there around the island and adding to it new coral, and then adding a monitoring system, low-touch monitoring system, that allowed us to record and capture the return of fish and monitor that as they came back into this ecosystem and measure the success of whether this is regrowing the coral or not. So obviously, you know, very sensitive ecology there. And so having a low touch solution in that space helps both with allowing the fish to start returning and keeps the amount of potential damage to the coral structures there at a minimum, as, you know, divers are not needed to be reintroduced into the environment to continuously monitor the regrowth of that ecology.
And on that, how would they have done it beforehand?
Typically beforehand, and I'm by no means a diving expert, but my understanding is beforehand, they would typically send divers down to be able to go through and actually, you know, monitor and video record the return of life in that ecosystem there. And so obviously it's very, very intrusive. You have humans entering the space, you have video, you know, the natural behavior of the fish is not really truly being captured, because you've got an alien species that's entered into that ecology.
Sure.
And so this, you know, this allows that those divers to go down on occasions to move cameras, but, you know, obviously not their day to day, and still capture the data.
And Patrick, how does Intel fit into this?
Yeah. So we have a long, obvious partnership with Accenture in bringing solutions to market. And what was really cool and fun and interesting about this project was bringing together kind of the software application expertise of Accenture with Intel in our overall development and hardware platform. So what we brought in was a combination of a core processing capability, as well as some unique acceleration capability that sits beside the processor and speeds up the processing of this data of the coral reef, such that you can interpret and use the data as close to real time as possible. And this, it allows the researchers, it allows the community It allows all of us to act more quickly and to interpret a much larger volume of data than you could if you tried to do it without this artificial intelligence or this automation capability. So it's the bringing together of the two capabilities, Accenture and Intel, that really made a difference here.
And do we think, I'm not sure who's the best one to answer this, but do you think this is something that opens up more capabilities for other things? At the moment, you're using it to effectively, from what I can gather, do sort of face recognition for fish to sort of see where they're moving around. What sort of elements does that allow you to do more beyond marine life?
Yeah. So I'll just, the applications for artificial intelligence are really somewhat limitless. We see the basic capabilities here really being applicable to many things worldwide, and a lot of those are around social good and how do you do things better for people, how do you improve people's lives, things like global warming and watching for trends in the climate and what's happening, things like looking in Africa for poachers of wild animals out on the Serengeti and beyond, in allowing people to know what's happening with the migration of animals there and maybe some people that aren't trying to do the best thing for those animals. Many, many applications that just allow us to be in places and to interpret data, large volumes of data very quickly and to act to help the environment and to help people worldwide. So lots of applications, lots of use for this artificial intelligence capability.
We've been working together with Intel on this analytics and artificial intelligence space for the course of the last 5-6 years, and together invested pretty significantly into the underlying platform that operates behind the scenes in this Corel project. It's our video analytics platform that here at Accenture, and we've optimized that with the help of Intel on top of their, back-end Xeon processors for the analytics effort, as well as the Movidius cameras and the FPGAs that allow the real-time processing at the edge. And so, as highlighted there, we believe that there's a many other places where this can be applied. Specific to this underwater type of application, this could be something that when rolled out at a larger scale could look at, migration rates of fish, depending upon temperature, et cetera. It could look at a larger section of ocean or reef. I know that they're starting to think about this in some other places around the world. It can help with monitoring of things in tight places where, divers just can't get to. But then on land, we've worked with them on a number of different applications for this technology, looking at things like worker safety, looking at things like at a city level. We've done some pilot programs with some city/national governments leveraging this technology as well. So as mentioned, the technology really is quite diverse and allows for a number of places where you want to apply intelligence to video and to allow the machine to augment the human effort in this space and take some of those rudimentary tasks that a machine can do and augment and better the lives of the humans and allow them to do the higher end, analytics and interpretation of the data.
And with so many, as Patrick was saying, with so many options available to you and so many fields and uses of AI, what made you decide to focus on coral reefs to begin with? Was that an important thing? Was that something that you saw that the technology was better suited to? Or was it just that you guys really like fish?
Good question. I don't believe it was necessarily a personal love of fish. I believe, it was one of those things where there's good timing on the opportunity where this came across our desk and seemed like a great application for the technology. It allowed us to do something very good for the environment. And as you look at coral reefs. There's a significant amount of benefit that they provide the world in general, and the degradation of that environment is something that will have, you know, massive ramifications on our world as we exist. So it certainly checks the box as far as being a noble and good thing to do. But it also, from just a pure technology perspective, gave us an interesting use case to go test this technology in some, you know, fairly extreme environments. You know, this is leveraging a wide array of technologies to be able to make this solution. You know, you have 4G communication coming back and taking the data out of a remote edge location. You have analytics being done by the camera and making decisions of the camera. You have near edge, or, you know, at the edge analytics being done in an FPGA, and then going back to a central, you know, edge to cloud, and analytics being done in the cloud that can make broader decisions as well. So technically, it was a very interesting project as well. And you know, you obviously had the benefits, as mentioned earlier, of helping one of these fragile ecologies that provide food for, you know, a seventh of the world's population.
And what do you think has been the hardest challenge? I don't mind who answers this, but, you know, the hardest challenge that you've had to overcome within this project, and how did you overcome it?
So I'll go ahead and go first. I think that the challenge that we had was just the environment itself. Obviously making this all waterproof, et cetera, and being able to capture the data in ways that we had never done before, you know, with, active cameras, et cetera. I really was not personally involved in the diving and things like that, but I did not get a bunch of problems that came across my desk on this. And so the only thing that I can highlight is just the challenge of doing this all underwater versus doing it, you know, in a factory or something along that line.
Yeah, it went fairly smoothly, very, very smoothly from a technology view. If you look at the capability, you've got an artificial engine compute capability that's actually in the camera that sits underwater. It's a technology we call Movidius VPU capability. That allows you to do the AI right at the camera level. And then you've got accelerated compute kind of onshore that connects wirelessly using 4G technology back and forth. And, you know, all that stuff worked pretty seamlessly. So, you know, as Jason said, it's more about the physical environment of building that barrier underwater, supporting the reef, and getting the equipment in place. Just those physical constraints is really the biggest challenge.
And the final question I have really is what's next?
Well, I was going to say one of the things that we're looking at going forward is just better cameras, better being more cameras so that we can look at more capability and more of what's happening across the reefs over a longer, bigger area and more sampling of what's happening. The other is a better camera in terms of infrared and capabilities so that you can see the weight, the depth of the fish, the depth of the coral reef itself, how it's growing, how it's not growing. So a lot of interesting stuff happening there. And then AI in general just continues to evolve in terms of its capability, its precision, accuracy, and the ability to give us better and better information.
Yeah, I believe that we're looking at some improvements, shall we say, to the processing system inside the solution as a next step as well. So, you know, constantly one of the benefits of this solution, it's built on technologies with an excellent roadmap that Intel's provided us. And so there will be, you know, future FPGAs that will help us with ongoing increase in the amount of processing we can do, speed of processing, as well as, you know, deeper insights as we move forward. We'll continue to monitor the growth of the coral and the return of the fish into this environment, and, you know, look at potential other applications for this in the future beyond just the Philippines there.
So now we come to the point of the show where I normally sit down with one of the team from Pocket Lin and talk about a product they're reviewing. But this week's slightly different because I've been the one that's been doing the reviewing itself, and in that case it's the iPhone SE. So I've asked Dan to join us, as he's another Apple aficionado on the team, to question me for a change and spin it over. So Dan, I'm going to hand it over to you.
Cool. So Stu, I mean, how did you find using the iPhone SE compared to, say, the 11?
I think it's one of those things. It's obviously harking back to the memory because the form factor is identical to the iPhone 8. And I reviewed and used the iPhone 8 for a while in 2017, so 3 years ago, and then obviously moved on to the iPhone 10 when that came out, and then the 10S, and then the 11. So going back to a Touch ID device and a smaller device was obviously slightly precarious for me. I suppose that's probably a word you could use. Mm-hmm. But I think this is not really designed for people that have already gone to Face ID. This is designed for people that have been using the 6, the 6S, the 7, 7S, and obviously the 8.
And in terms of the camera as well, because I was quite interested how the sort of camera was, because obviously it's basically the iPhone 11 camera. How did you find using it compared to the Pro and the 10R? Because some of the images I saw didn't look that great, but you know, it was just anecdotal evidence. So I haven't actually used it myself, whereas obviously you have.
Yeah, so what I found is I've moved into it last week. I've been using it for about a week now. It's one of those things where it's very reminiscent of the capabilities of the iPhone 8. So it's exactly the same sensor as the iPhone 8. So you get a wide angle, 12 megapixel on the back. I think it's a 1.4 aperture. So as long as you've got good daylight, it's brilliant. And it takes nice pictures. They've got nice crispness to them, colorful or what have you. They've taken the iPhone 8 sensor and not just left it with that, but then they've added a lot of the capabilities of the iPhone 11 through software because it uses the A13 Bionic processor, which is the same processor in the latest range, the 11, 11 Pro, 11 Pro Max. What that means is you only get a single lens, a single camera, but you do get all the portrait modes for like high key mono and you know, lighting, studio for lighting effects and things like that. So you can achieve some sort of depth field to it. Obviously it uses AI. I found with my wispy hair, because I've had a haircut for quite a while now, it was struggling at the edges. And if you took people wearing sunglasses, whatever, sometimes they've got very thin frames, it starts to issue there. On the whole, it's fine. But even with the 11, 11 Pro, you still get those same issues. So there's no extra benefits there or not. One interesting thing is a bit like the 10R, you can only, portrait mode only works with people. So you can't suddenly take a picture of your dog in portrait mode and go, wow, isn't that amazing? Or like other stuff you find around the world. But ultimately it's good. I think the big key missing value here though, is it doesn't have the 11's night mode. So once it starts getting low light, you start getting picture quality as you did in everything prior to the 11, which normally means that if the people are moving around, then it ends up in blurry yeah. photos.
Yeah, I mean, I use the 10S Max, and I get a lot of those issues because, you know, I've used various other phones from Huawei and Samsung and others that are obviously a lot better at taking night photos, just like the 11 Pro is. And it's quite marked going back to a device like that, isn't it?
Yeah, and you don't, I mean, obviously, I've been using the 11 since September, the 11 Pro, sorry, since September. And, you know, night mode is a game changer on that thing. You just don't really think about it. You take a picture regardless of the light. And then you know, you've got good results. Going backwards to the 8, not the 8, sorry, to the SE, you do find that just the dark, you know, if it's low light conditions, it's blurry. Now, that's not so bad at the moment because we're in, you know, walking into summer, that should be fine. But come winter, if you're back in the pubs, you know, back out, you know, in dark environments, those pictures are going to be the same that you've been used to if you're upgrading, as I say, from another 4.7 inch device upwards. But it is something which I wish they had tried to address at some point.
We're talking here comparing it to obviously much more expensive iPhones and other handsets as well. But actually, this is an iPhone for the masses, isn't it? This is a phone for people upgrading from an iPhone 6 or coming from a handset that actually is a lot worse. The difference is actually quite a step up.
Oh yeah, and I mean that's the thing we should caveat at any point when we talk about this. You know, we're talking about night mode functionality, we're talking about camera capabilities, all the other stuff on a device that is you know, I think the 11's what, £800 at the moment, something along those lines. You know, the Pro is like £1,000 and the SE is 400 quid. Effectively, it's £419 in the UK, it's $399 in the US. And so for, you know, bang for buck, you know, you are getting, the camera is fantastic at £400 or thereabouts. And, you know, the, some of the functionalities, the speed, it just zips along because it's got, you know, great processor in it. You know, there's, it means that you can use Apple Arcade. It means you should be able to do a lot of AR stuff when Apple keep on pushing this, whether you want to or not. You know, there are things going on there. It pretty much coped with anything that I could do on it. You know, from editing pictures to, you know, playing games to, you know, those kind of things. So I think it's, you know, from that respect, buy this phone, you get tapped into all the Apple services, which is probably the main goal here. And I suspect if you're in that phone, you won't then have to upgrade it for, I reckon, a good 3 or 4 years, because it will probably do what you want it to do and then some, certainly for the people that this is aimed at. These people, you know, it's not, they're not pro users. These are guys and girls that are, you know, get their email, chat to their friends on WhatsApp, you know, take pictures of the kids. And if they're lucky, if they're really excited, we'll play a game. But otherwise, that's, you know, that's what you do on the phones, isn't it, most of the time. And this addresses those, that audience perfectly.
Yeah, definitely. And the screen size is a key aspect to that as well, isn't it? Because many people don't want a big phone. You know, there's a lot of choice of big phones out there now. But if you want a smaller size, you've actually got to go further down the range. And obviously, this is further down the range, but it's actually, you know, a very capable device as well.
Yeah, and I think that's the case. You know, one of the main big concerns and complaints I had about the iPhone XR was that it kind of serviced a market in that it was a cheaper version of what was, you know, the XS at the time. And that was brilliant. But the thing was massive. Yeah. And unless you had a big handbag or even a bag to put it in, it just... it wasn't something you could put in your pocket unless you kind of had cargo pants on or something, you know? So I think from that respect, this is, you know, I've always been one of those users that's trended towards a smaller phone anyway. I've always, when the 6, 7 and 8 ranges came out, I was always I didn't use a Plus. The Plus has just always been too big for me. And, you know, even given a chance now where, you know, I could use a Pro, I could use 11, a Pro or a Pro Max, I've always, you know, personal preference, I'd always opt for the Pro, that, you know, the smaller size. It's a shame that, you know, Apple have, again, it's all about cost and it's about understanding, you know, hitting that £400-ish, you know, marker. It's a shame that they didn't utilize the, you know, the Face ID technology, the notched screen, to make more screen for a smaller device. That would have been lovely. But then I suspect by doing that, it would have pushed the price, you know, considerably up. It's just, a lot of people out there just, you know, and just want a smaller phone. In fact, it's, you know, it was very appealing to go back to something smaller, which you could use, you know, without having to, I think the Plus size, and not to go on about this, you know, the Plus size and the Max Pro, you know, Max sizes, it feels like you have to sit down and use it with two hands to do something.
Well, I was going to say, I've mastered doing it one-handed now with the Max, because I'm Max all the way, really.
Yeah, and I just can't. I'm one of those people. I want to use my phone on the go that fits in with my life, rather than having to sit there very consciously thinking, right, I'm about to do something. Let me get this massive thing out of my phone, get my pocket, and start using it. Also, you know, trying to fit a Max in your pocket or a Plus in your pocket, for me, is, I've always struggled to understand how that's even comfortable for most people.
Yeah, the Plus especially was, you know, ridiculous, really. I mean, I've got an 8 Plus hit right here, and, you know, it does look huge even compared to the Max, really, but just because of the bezels. So does this make a lot more sense in terms of Apple's range of iPhones, do you think?
Yeah, I think it's a lot more logical. If what you found, and it's that I know a lot of parents, and when it comes to buying that first iPhone for them, it's trying to understand where that fits in. And you kind of, at the moment, I think most parents were sort of settling for somewhere around a 6 or a 7, but buying them secondhand, or, you know, kind of trying to weird markets or hand-me-downs and things like this. And then you suddenly run into the scenario where you can't necessarily, it doesn't necessarily run the latest iOS, and that, you know, that'll soon age quite quickly. this way, I think if you were thinking about getting, you know, your teenager in your life a phone, an iPhone, because you want to be part of that same ecosystem, £400, you know, $300, you know, $400, whatever, you can go in and just say, right, this is your phone, and you can buy a new phone when you're old enough, but ultimately this will work, and you know that it's going to keep up to date and all the other stuff. And I think that, along with this huge swathe of middle people that want a phone to WhatsApp and chat and all those kind of things, but don't necessarily need all the pro functionalities and all the latest, you know, hoo-hahs about what we can do and what we can't do, this phone fits perfectly for them. And so I suspect across the year, a bit like the XR was incredibly successful for Apple when it launched, I suspect this will be the runaway success for them, and you'll be surprised to see how many of these you do see when you eventually come out of lockdown. Well, that's it for this week's show. And don't forget, if you want us to plant a tree on your behalf, all you have to do is tell us the MAC address of a Honeywell smart thermostat that is active in your office or home. Remember, the thermostat can already be installed and being used, or you can go out and buy a completely new one and then just let us know about it. But it must be active, and you must tell us before the end of this month. You can find a form on Pocketlint via a link on our homepage. Until next time, pip pip.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.